Like, this has been really weird because I've been like really enjoying listening. It feels like I've been listening to a really good podcast, and then I remember I can actually talk as well.
You can chime in because you're on this podcast.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird scenario.
Hey guys, how you doing? I'm Johnny, Eclectic Method. Kind of like a video remix artist, musician, and animator.
Beautiful.
So I learned something new today. I learned of a new concept, which is something that, of course, exists, but I never really put the two together, which is crypto gaming, which apparently is a thing that exists. Apparently, crypto can be a precursor to just about everything nowadays.
Yeah, crypto kitties, crypto punks.
Wait, care to elaborate on crypto gaming? And kitties and punks, too. I'm curious about this.
Who are you talking to?
Yeah.
But I guess both of you.
Oh, go ahead, Johnny.
Oh, what I understand in crypto gaming is people are making, like, items and weapons and clothing that people can wear in games. They can take them from one game to the other, and then people are trading these objects.
Oh.
That's the crypto art element to gaming. But then there's also all these other games like Decentraland and Crypto Voxels, which are kind of like Second Life places, but you enter there using your crypto wallet. And some of it's about spending money and using a currency in a virtual world.
You know, that reminds me of, I don't know if any of you have ever played Habbo Hotel, but growing up, I played a lot of Habbo Hotel. And it's kind of like that where, you know, you buy furniture and you spend like real life money on your furniture and you just like trade it. And that really was like the start of cryptocurrency, I think. You know, trading a couch for a soda machine or trading a couch for a girlfriend.
Well, that's just bartering.
Wait, what?
What?
Your girlfriend didn't like your couch.
No.
Oh.
No. I mean my digital one when I was like 10 years old or something. No.
See, that's a an age and a venue where I don't know if that was a girl.
Yeah, probably not. But yeah. I was happy to be there.
Johnny, you brought us something which actually, on a semi-serious note, is a fascinating concept, which is something that I also haven't really considered until today, which is the idea of taking an item from one game to another, which I'm just imagining now, like you buy a gun in Counter-Strike and take it to the Disney universe of Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
All jokes aside, that's really cool. The idea of like modular game design, which translates from one title to another. That's fascinating.
Exactly. That's where it's all going. And it's like, I don't know if you guys have ever messed around with Second Life. There's loads of people coding their own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to mess around in there. And one day Ray Kurzweil was giving a conference in Helsinki that was like simultaneously in Second Life. And someone gave me something called an atomic weapon, which basically would like render particles into the world until everyone's computers crashed. And we would simultaneously like play white noise over the speakers at the conference in Helsinki. I was just kind of making a point about the singularity, but yeah, I didn't realize I'd caused so much trouble and it was actually shutting down part of the conference. But yeah, that kind of stuff of people coding their own weapons and then take them to places they're not meant to be. Like showing up at a Ray Kurzweil talk with an atomic gun. Yeah.
Is there any video of that? I'd love to see that.
Yeah, that's really funny.
You know, there might be. It was about 2006.
Oh, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, I was really into Second Life for a while when it was like me and my mate Paul, we were messing around doing super silly stuff and then it was really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Second Life is it's this weird, like almost staple of like the early 2000s where it's like it still looks like an early 2000s game and it's like, I mean, as I haven't played it in a long time, but it's definitely one of those things where it's just like the poster child of MMOs, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
It's almost kind of like a Second Life for people. I think that Second Life is a really interesting concept, which it's not really like other MMOs. It taps into something that I think also the Sims taps into, which is that we have this really strange desire to simulate our own lives on some level. It's one of those things that if you erased from existence right now, like the concept of a life simulator didn't exist and you pitched it, I think people would look at you funny. Like if you pitched the idea of, oh, you're going to go online and instead of living your life, you're going to pretend that you are. It sounds silly, but it's inherently interesting of a thing to do. And it seems to attract a lot of people. I wonder why that is.
I want to construct digital IKEA furniture.
Yeah, exactly.
That should be a thing.
IKEA simulator?
Yeah. I'm surprised IKEA hasn't done that yet.
That's what they should be doing in the metaverse.
Maybe they have, and I just haven't heard of it or something. I don't know. So,
yeah, that's true.
Johnny, you've been doing this for a billion years. Can you tell us a little bit about basically just who you are, what you do, and what people can expect if they tune into your stuff?
Yeah, cool. So I'm a video remix artist, which means I make music out of video. And I started out in the late 90s making mashups, which is like when you take two songs and mix them together to make a new song, but doing video mashups. And then over time, I was doing video mashups as a touring DJ, touring video DJ. And then I got into doing that, but remixing movies. So taking little fragments of movies like gunshots and action scenes and then making rhythms out of that. And then taking the dialogues from like movies, TV shows, memes, YouTube videos, literally anything, and making music out of that. And now what I do is like do live DJ sets. Every Friday I'm on something called Token Smart's Discord server, and they're doing a live video DJ set in there at 1 p.m. Eastern. And now I've also started transitioning into making animation. My wife is too, and we both are doing like 3D cinema, 4D stuff. Basically, that's just because a lot of the stuff I'm doing, copyright is such a huge issue. It's even at times when I've managed to get like, you know, nearly deals with Motown and huge record labels and the BBC, even those people haven't been able to like license their own clips. And so it's just like, it's impossible to ever make a something you can put on iTunes or tour properly. And yeah, so now I'm making cinema 4D. I'm basically just doing the same stuff where I make music out of movie clips, but I just make my own movie clips.
Ah, that's a smart workaround. It's funny because I was actually gonna ask you, I guess just with, I mean, this wasn't like my question exactly that I was gonna ask you, but I guess I can kind of rephrase it to fit that a little bit better. I mean, with things like that, you know, because obviously in the digital space, right, these kinds of things, like, they change. You know, a lot of people will start doing something and then they'll like change the laws for some reason when it comes to digital media. So is it like kind of what's the word? I guess, is it kind of like, does it feel cool to kind of change the method of eclectic method to make it more eclectic, if that makes sense?
yeah. I love it. This is amazing. I mean, I love video remixing and DJing and stuff. I may be starting to enjoy DJing less, and obviously there's not so many gigs around, but I like enjoy house parties and doing weird stuff more than like you're banging house club set. I do like house music, but you know, just doing the same dance music everyone else is doing is a bit boring. The cinema 4D stuff is amazing. I guess I took ages to get into it out of laziness, and now I'm into it. I totally love it. And then at the same time, just at the end of last year, after learning for like 6 months, I started getting into crypto art, and that's just been amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I think what you're doing like definitely fits your whole vibe. Like it doesn't seem like that much of a stretch to, I guess, change into that sort of thing. Cause like, obviously what you're making is still kind of in that same, like, I guess your whole aesthetic, I guess you can call it, you know, it's very, like, it all fits. It all makes sense to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I call it video music, not music videos.
There you go. I like that.
So there is a kind of the elephant in the room when I think it comes to this kind of stuff, which is that what you're doing, or I guess what you've done at times, treads on a path of ambiguous legality when it comes to the licensing of clips and how companies interact with that. And I'm curious what your experience has been when it comes to these companies who see your work. How have they treated it? How have they reacted to your using little micro clips from their works. And have you run into any problems with that, or have they been mostly pretty cool?
No, all the problems are like automated systems, like humans. It's awesome. I get on with humans. It's mm-hmm. their like algorithm that hates me. So yeah. It's basically like, for example, I remixed the Mighty Boosh, and I did an event with the Mighty Boosh guys, and I played it to them, and they were like, "This is awesome." I was like, "Can I put it on YouTube?" They're like, "Yeah, sure." I put it on YouTube, and the BBC automatic copyright thing takes it down. So it's like it's not really a moral thing where the two guys who have written every episode of the show and created the show like love it, you know? What
right.
I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's not like I'm robbing. And also, the other thing is I don't put adverts on my YouTube stuff. All the adverts you see in my YouTube videos have been put there by the film companies. So I did a mm-hmm. Wolf of Wall Street remix that has like millions of views, and that's earned Universal at least $30,000, maybe more. So it's like,
oh, good for them.
Yeah. So I don't think they're upset. They're not. So yeah. So I could list names endlessly, but loads of people I've remixed have just been positive. Like, you know, Anthony Bourdain, Mike Judge, Juliet Lewis, Bootsy Collins, so many people, LL Cool J, so many people I've done put in remixes or used, and they've just like retweeted it and been supportive. And sometimes they hire me, like Monty Python hired me because they saw I did a remix of them. I did a remix of Fatboy Slim, and then he added it to his DVD as a bonus track, and he paid me for it, even though I'd done it for free. Yeah. So there's like, that's happened a few times too.
That's wicked.
That's really cool. I think that's interesting that it kind of shows that there's room for this kind of stuff. When it comes to people, it's the systems that's the problem, I guess, in a way, is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't want to like name names and embarrass anyone, but I was talking to a very cool person in the computer game, a very popular computer game, and they wanted me to remix them, and then they went to the people at the head of the computer game, and they were like, "We love this idea, but we've sold all rights for anything outside of the computer game to this company that produces like video for TV," and so they weren't actually able to even do a remix of their own computer game.
That's
like that's kind of nonstop and all this stuff. The only way I ever get around it is when you work with people who control everything they do. So like right now, my wife and I were working with Bootsy Collins, a piece of crypto art and some songs. And Bootsy Collins has like long left his record deals, and he controls his own label, his own publishing, and so he can do whatever he wants. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you get some of these big artists who are super cool and super progressive, but they can't do anything because their hands are tied by contracts. It's like when you see all these DJs playing during lockdown and they're getting their own tunes taken down, you know?
Yeah. I was actually going to say that is commonplace these days for the artists themselves to get copyright strikes.
Yeah, that's where all these DJs going on Facebook and playing their DJ sets, and then, yeah, they get spotted because they've sold the rights to the tune to someone else.
Yeah.
The copyright system when it comes to music is it's in a weird place. I remember, I think it was, there's this YouTuber named Gus Johnson who made a video where he was talking about people talking about Bohemian Rhapsody, and that apparently that video got flagged by the rights holders for Queen because it violated the rules for the song Bohemian Rhapsody. It's detection is in a weird place. I don't necessarily understand it right now. My question, I guess, is do you think that the way that companies do it is wrong, or do you think it's just an unfortunate effect of what is necessary when it comes to the legality of it?
It's so funny. I almost like my first answer is I don't care. No, but my second answer, I mean, like, it's stupid. Like, for example, I did a remix where I used Jeremy Steig Howling for Judy, like the flute loop that Beastie Boys used on Sure Shot. But the Beastie mm-hmm. Boys collect the, I mean, not the Beastie Boys, but their label, they collect the advertising on it. It's like, well, they don't own his original song. It's just they're the only one claiming that loop. So like the laws clearly don't work in so many different ways. And the other thing is they've just kept extending the copyright law. You see, copyright used to be something crazy, like the 30 years, and then they extend it to 50. And what happens is every time Walt Disney is about to run out of copyright, yep, they go and lobby the government and then get it extended to 70 years. I think it's now going up to like 95 or something. So every time a classic Beatles album or something's about to fall in the public domain, I really think that has nothing to do with morality. It's or like, you know, moving culture forward or protecting people. It's purely about protecting huge conglomerates.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really funny. When I was in college, I took some business law classes, and one of the adages was, if you're trying to figure out where copyright law would land on something, you just try to imagine to yourself, what would benefit Disney? And that was probably the correct answer for that situation. Yeah.
Yeah. I do have a question before we move on from this point.
Oh, good.
So my whole thing with copyright law, it's the stupidest thing ever, because for me, I feel like music, in a lot of ways, like music and jingles and different tunes and, you know, like little stings, I feel like they kind of go hand in hand with, I guess, feeling nostalgia towards like a certain franchise or a certain movie, film, video game, whatever. It's weird that copyright law, like, it almost feels like its intended purpose is to protect this whatever it is. But realistically, it's almost just free advertising. You know, like, if I hear a song from something,
yeah,
I'm not gonna go to that person's video to hear that song. I'm gonna go to that person's video to consume whatever it is they're creating, or if it's a remix, I wanna hear that. You know what I mean? Like, I would go to the original whatever if I wanna hear that thing, or Spotify or whatever. Like, I almost feel like their whole purpose is like, they think people are gonna go to this thing just to hear the song, and it's going to take money out of their pocket.
Yeah. That's so funny that you say that, Duplex, because literally earlier today when I was doing some more research on Eclectic Method, I watched the Wolf of Wall Street remix, and I was thinking, like, good. Oh man, now I really want to watch the movie again. So, like, it was inspiring me to want to consume that content.
See, it's having the adverse effect they think it would have.
Exactly. That's true.
It's so weird.
Well, I think with music, the slight different thing is when you're doing a mashup, you might be using a minute or two of someone else's music. And so that's quite a large portion. When you're remixing a movie, you end up using like 2 second clips and at most a minute or two of the movie. Right. And also all these movies that you have bloggers that are covering them. And you have, you know, like a TV show in Chechnya that wants to feature the Avengers, and Marvel can't have teams of lawyers answering the phone all the time going, yes, TV show in Chechnya, you can use the clip. So they just allow people to use the trailer and clips because it makes sense. So yeah. that's why the film remixes I do don't really cause any trouble. But then, you know, and then they get to make money out of it too. The big thing is that all of this stuff, like Wolf of Wall Street, it could have been a song on iTunes and something that it was sold and was popular, but they literally couldn't license their own movie.
Oh,
that's such a weird situation.
Yeah, it's like they could license the sound, but when it came to the video, they said, can you remake it with puppets? Because we can't actually license the video to be used in this way. And I was like, no, that's kind of like, you know, just detracts from what I'm really trying to do.
You should remake it with puppets.
Yeah, it's kind of like an interesting show.
I've done I've done one of those, actually. I'll send you a link later.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So obviously there's a lot I want to get to, and just wanted to point out to the audience that we do record these live on Discord. If you want to go to discord.t1podcast.com or follow the links in the link tree in the description below if you're watching this on YouTube, or in the show notes if you're watching this on all podcast platforms. Just a real quick question before we get into some more of the meat. Why the name Eclectic Method?
It was approach to music. Super eclectic.
Okay.
Going and playing hip hop clubs one night and house clubs the other, and even in some sets playing hip hop, house, techno, jazz, blues, everything.
What attracts you to diversity in genre?
I get bored really quickly.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's an interesting approach. I know that a lot of bands like to stick to their wheelhouse, but there is, I think, especially in electronic, there's so many interesting different genres, and I feel like if I was ever an artist, I'd want to explore them all. So I totally understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're at an amazing time in music as well, where you can literally listen to anything from any part of the world, and there's music popping off on every continent that's worth listening to.
I am curious to know, since this is a question that I think is on everyone's minds, I try not to talk too much about the topic of COVID on the podcast, because I feel like it's going to date the show in some ways, and I want people to be able to look back on these episodes and listen to them and not think,
I remember COVID was crazy, man.
Remember that shitty time in everyone's life? Yeah, I don't want to bum them out too
much.
That
was so long ago.
I'm curious, since you are a musician and musicians have had a right time of it with the lockdown, how have you adjusted to the restrictions that have come out of the pandemic, and what's your outlook for the future of music in situations where gathering isn't really necessarily possible for the time being?
Yeah. So obviously before this, a lot of what I did was live events, even just making videos for other people's events and DJing. So that's definitely all totally disappeared. For me though, because I was already doing kind of production internet-y stuff, it just took a bit of time to transition into that. And that definitely accelerated my learning animation and being able to do these other things. Mm-hmm. So for me personally, I'm getting into VR. I want to do music videos that you live inside of. So all the objects are animating around you and creating the sounds. You can also touch the objects and that would change the sound, that kind of stuff.
That's badass.
That sounds so cool.
And also I've been working on Robot Fight Club, where you show up and then you can have a musical fight.
Oh,
a musical fight.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's like all syncopated to the beat, and it's like a, you know, Street Fighter game where you hit the keys and fight, but everything's syncopated to the beat, so everything about the fight will be musical, and that's the kind of nightclub. It's a night fight club.
Yeah. Oh, dude, that sounds so cool.
There's so many things right now. I feel like there was a point in time about 5-10 years ago, I would say, where I kind of had the viewpoint that technology had hit a point of diminishing returns, but right now with AI and with machine learning and stuff and the new technologies that are popping off with crypto and everything, I think we're so close to something really cool right now. Like you're talking about these things that are just, I wouldn't even have imagined them half a decade ago, but I think technology is in that that Dick Tease moment right now, where we're
literally people are making sex machines that operate.
That's true.
With a little robot arm. Have you seen the videos? It's super funny. It's just like a guy lying there fully clothed.
Yeah, I've seen that video.
No, but it's like, I think we're really really close to something right now, and I think that in some ways the pandemic has sort of forced that, where we're looking to explore more digital spaces than in the past.
Yeah,
and I don't want to say like it's good, but it's kind of a silver lining of that.
Yeah,
yeah. I wish it hadn't happened, but for me, it's been good because it's forced forward this world in which I quite enjoy this Discord online chatting with friends. I have a lot more friends now than when I was living in the real world, you know.
It's like, yeah. Same.
But the thing to wrap around, the thing I can't wrap my head around, even though I know what it is exponential growth. Is like, you know, the difference in technology from 2016 to 2018 is like a few months in 2019. And now, you know, by the end of this decade, this world is going to look totally different to what we know. The difference between 2020 and 2030 will be much more than the previous 10 years.
Yeah,
well, absolutely. I mean, obviously, even this number is becoming outdated now. But there was a certain point where I started to look at internet years as dog years, where basically every year the internet is kind of 7 years of progression at this point, where the things move so fast. And it's very, very exciting. And I guess above all else, I'm glad I'm not a boomer right now, because I would just be missing out on all of it. Internet is fun. I know that's a pretty basic observation, but
I mean, yeah. It's fun depending on how you consume it, because I feel like it's definitely like, as someone who grew up like during the, I guess, the MySpace era, I feel like it's like one of those things. I don't have my keyboard, so I can't hit the yeah key. One sec. There we go.
All right.
I feel like it's one of those things where like you can, like, being born in that, not being, I wasn't born in 2005 or whatever, but you know, being, I guess, a teenager, a young teenager in that era, and then kind of like experiencing the full spectrum of the internet to where it is now. It's definitely interesting just to see the whole timeline and how things do move so fast. Like, you know, like you got like started out with like weird forum culture, you know, like it's people giving their thoughts on like forums. And now you could like literally put your opinion anywhere and like there's always somebody there to tell you that you're stupid for having that opinion, no matter where you put it.
Yeah, I kind of love that.
Yeah, it's great.
I'm fine with that. I think the other thing about the internet is like, do not take people so seriously, because you know when you meet them in real life, they never say that.
Imagine if they did, though. Imagine if you met one guy that, like, everything he puts on the internet, he holds that opinion in real life.
And goes around to the street shouting at people.
Yeah.
That's a terrible shirt.
Dude, your hair sucks.
No, but it's something about talking through a keyboard, isn't it? That brings out the, like, subconscious in people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that veil of anonymity that protects us all.
I mean, it doesn't. Kudos, I'm curious if you have any fascinating observations right now.
Not especially. You guys are doing a great job.
Thanks. Thank you, Kudos. I appreciate that.
Yeah. For reference, this is basically the last time we're going to be recording at this hour, because Kudos is a relatively new co-host of the podcast, and for him, this is 6 a.m.
He's on live support right now.
Yeah, this is pretty brutal. Yeah, it was either that or for him to develop a crippling cocaine habit, and I figure, you know, the better approach is to just record later. So, obviously, we talked a little bit about the short-term adjustments that you've made, but for someone who's been doing this for multiple decades, obviously the landscape has changed quite dramatically over time. And I'm curious to know about your progression as an artist, because obviously the scene has changed since the 2000s. And I took a look at your YouTube channel as well. I saw that, not necessarily that you got your start back then, but a lot of your remix videos were popping. I know that remix culture on YouTube, where remixing like things like Stephen Colbert and Star Wars was very popular at the time. But how has your career progressed over time? What kinds of changes have you made, and what observations do you have about the progression of the music scene?
Yeah, give us the eclectic timeline of your eclectic method.
Yeah, it's okay. I'll take you through the timeline, and then I'll give you my opinions of the progression.
Okay.
I'm 40 years old. I started DJing when I was like 12, 13.
Nice.
I was playing in nightclubs before I was legally allowed into them. and when I was like 17, I saw like Cold Cut and Hextatic do Timber, which is a video that's made out of chainsaw sounds. It's like the first video remix thing I ever saw. And I was like, I want to do that. So since 1997, I've been doing that. In like 2002, I formed Eclectic Method with a few different people. Mm-hmm. And then for the 2000s, you know, 2010, I was just doing a lot of traveling and DJing. It was awesome. You know, all around the world, I got to see the world. As I've got older, I probably wouldn't enjoy that right now. I'd be exhausted.
Right.
So I'm glad I did it then. And I definitely would love to travel. I still do, but not as much. This is like on an airplane once or twice every week.
Right.
Or sometimes more than that. And so for me, I'm actually enjoying now again, maybe more than I've ever enjoyed any point in my life. And that's because after like years of doing this, I've got a lot of good things in place, and then I've suddenly started making original content. And now it's very easy to get stuff off the ground because of making original content. So it's kind of like right now, the last few months and since learning all this stuff, I just absolutely loving it. The way watching how music has progressed over this time, I feel like in a weird way, some dance music hasn't changed that much. A lot of the innovations popping off in other scenes that aren't necessarily like DJ culture. Maybe right. DJ culture's, it's weird. DJ culture was like in the 90s, the most punk, reactionary, revolutionary act. And now it's a bit like not. So it's a bit, it's the norm now. It's the base level. And it's very easy to upset DJs and to do stuff that they're like, oh, we shouldn't do that. And, but whereas it comes from a place of using like synthesizers in the wrong way and using equipment in the wrong way and just being punk. And I think it's lost a lot of that. And that's elsewhere now.
Do you think David Guetta is to blame?
Yeah. And then the other thing is like computers. Like I've just built another PC literally this weekend. It's just, you know, the graphics cards, the computers. I know it sounds geeky and boring, but like that shit makes me so happy.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm like, oh my God, like the hard drive in it is 10 times faster than the SSD in my last machine, and two graphics cards just like rendering like lightning. And I'm like, oh, I love the future. Yeah. I don't want to go back to the 2000s. No, that's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, like I wouldn't say that I wouldn't say that building a PC is better than sex, but it's up there, man. Like, just getting all the parts together and everything, and having a more powerful machine every few years is just it's one of my favorite things to do as well. And
it's better than sex, is what you're saying.
This is my first build alone, actually. My friend helped me over Skype. Yeah. My friend helped me over Skype, and it's like, I was actually thinking, I'm not going to be able to do this, but it's really simple these days.
It is.
Yeah. A lot of, like, I feel like a lot of these PCs are built specifically so you can build them. You could tear them down and redo them.
Yeah.
Which is pretty nice.
Yeah.
Well, to be completely honest, the building of a PC is something that I think intimidates a lot of people who are on the outside of it. But the truth is, it's really just slightly more complicated Legos. It's not as tricky as people think it is, because the parts are designed to fit within each other. Like, you're supposed to plug certain things into certain things, and it all kind of goes into the motherboard. It's not, the barrier to entry is, I think, mostly psychological when it comes to building PCs.
Yeah, and for me, if it was the kind of PC I wanted, it would have cost so much more if I'd got a company to build it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they will. Yeah, to anyone listening, just for reference, companies will charge you out the ass just to build a PC for you, and you can build that PC for yourself for free easily in an afternoon if you lay it all out. Like,
it's, well, not free, but yeah.
Well, I mean, free isn't the value of your time. That's all.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, back to the timeline. Please continue.
All right, timeline. So now we're in the 2000s and the robots are coming, and I love it. And AI stuff. Oh, man, I haven't even properly got into that. But, like, one of my mates is working on software that analyzes what's in videos and will identify objects and color schemes and then cut the video based on, like, predefined rules. And all that stuff's super exciting, because that's the most boring part of my work.
I think that's so cool. That's one of those things that I wouldn't have predicted back in the day. Like, we were talking about the idea of machines just figuring shit out on its own. Like, just things that you wouldn't think a computer would be able to do, like pull out specific colors or recognize faces and stuff. It just blows me away.
Like, oddly specific tasks that are not very general for like AI or any sort of like computing software to do. Yeah, that shit's
or
nuts.
Like memorizing a Seinfeld episode in order to produce another one. It's just wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and God knows what's being developed out there. Like, for fun, my wife and I make sci-fi short stories, and one of them is like about this AI that starts turning a guy into a terrorist. It's like waking him up in the middle of the night and brainwashing him slowly. But it's like, I just imagine, like, maybe some AI escaping from Google Labs or something and doing that kind of stuff in future.
Oh,
messing with the markets, you know, shorting companies, that kind of thing.
Yeah, dude. We could have a super long conversation about AI doing things they're not supposed to do, because I find that shit fascinating. I feel like it's a very real possibility, but like only if the humans like put Siri inside of like a sex doll or something. And I feel like she might come alive and start breakdancing on cities.
That sounds like totally the kind of thing we'd do.
Someone in the chat, by the way, is requesting specifically that we talk about upscaling. Do you guys know anything about this? Because, I mean, it is a thing.
Yeah, I've only done it with a professional company once before, where they upscaled everything to 4K. It was all like, I'm not sure if it was even AI back then. I think some of it was like they were sitting down with a pen and correcting pixels and going, make that bigger.
I see.
I think that's really interesting, the idea that a machine can figure out what something is supposed to look like if it's at a higher resolution, and then just making it. That's a cool idea as well.
Yeah, that shit trips me out. Like, those apps that like can take like a photo from like the 50s or whatever and just restore it so it looks like it was taken yesterday.
I saw a video the other day, I think it was actually yesterday on Reddit, where they upscaled and remastered and colorized a video of a girl feeding a cat back in 1899, I think.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that video.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's pretty
awesome.
I feel
like that could summarize everything I'm saying on this episode. It's just, that's so cool. That's a cool idea.
Yeah.
Anyway,
back to the timeline.
Yeah, I think I rushed through it. But the 2000s was like electronic music. I moved to the United States in 2007. And okay. I slept on a sofa in an office. These people very kindly let me work out this office. I slept on a sofa till I found a place. But then dance music popped off in the United States, like right after I arrived, 2008, 2009. So it was an amazing time to be there. Even though the massive crash had happened, there was like you say, back then, Stephen Colbert doing all that kind of remixing. Everything was popping off, doing music festivals like Ultra, playing at the Playboy Mansion, a lot of America stuff. Actually, I used to travel a lot around the world when I lived in London. But as soon as I moved to the States, I found for some reason I was only in America. I would go to Mexico occasionally or Canada occasionally, but mostly I was always in the States.
Yeah.
Like from London, for some reason, it just seemed easier to go around the world.
Well, okay, so you're mostly doing your thing in... Did you say you did in Mexico too?
I just played in Mexico like 4 or 5 times.
How was that?
Oh, awesome.
I'm always curious about like those kinds of shows in Mexico, because obviously Mexico is like a completely different world in a lot of... It's like very different as far as like culture goes. I feel like they're always like behind, but very much the same, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'd say it's like it's close to Spain in culture, like the way they dance and celebrate life. And like when I was a DJ living in Europe, I would come and play in Barcelona like every few months, every few weeks sometimes.
Yeah.
And Madrid. But I just loved Spain because it was like everyone was laid back. Everyone left everyone alone. Everyone loved partying. You could just hang out on the beach. The weather was great. And I actually wanted to move here first, but there was no work here. It wasn't possible to kind of live in Barcelona and make a living at this. So I went to the States instead. But then now, because of the internet, you can be anywhere. So I came here like 7 years ago.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Mexico is so much like Spain that they actually speak Spanish. It's weird. So, okay. Eclectic method. Like, what's your modus operandi today? Like if you woke up today and you're like, I'm going to make a thing, what would that look like in particular? What really turns your gears at this point?
Like making super musical video stuff and making everything from scratch, like making all the music, all the visuals, everything. So like we're just finishing up the Bootsy Collins. We've made like a 3D model of Bootsy Collins playing bass, and he made an amazing riff, and then I turned it into drum and bass tune. And so that's one thing I'm doing, a few other tunes with him that won't have videos. And I've done a Kung Fu fight that's rhythmical. So every kick and punch forms bits of the music. And my wife right now is building a snowboard, skateboard, surfboard video where the boards will change from one into the other, but they'll be in perfectly the same place and it will be musical. So like a surfboard becomes, you know, a skateboard on concrete, and then it becomes a snowboard on snow. That kind of thing, and so circles round and round. So that's like loads of like we literally have like 20 ideas that we just got to get on and make now. That's just like, just want to build the next musical video thing.
I'd imagine that's great to just have like a list of creative things to do, because like I feel like a lot of people, like a lot of creative people, myself included, like I feel like if you don't have like that, those sort of things planned ahead, you just kind of don't know what to do.
Yeah, this one of the advantages of having a podcast is it gives you something to do every single week. You have to get creative every week. That's been helpful for me, I think.
Yeah.
In the past when I felt lost, I've just done tutorials. Not necessarily stuff I need to do, but just do a tutorial, because it's like, okay, I'm not really coming up with anything right now. I'm going to learn something.
Yeah.
You keep mentioning, by the way, that you have a wife who's involved in your creative process. I think that's something that not everyone obviously can benefit from, but that must be, what's the first word that's coming to mind is useful, I guess, that you guys both share kind of a creative vision.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's really awesome. And also like we homeschool, and our son has an office, has a desk in our office, but he's like, likes drawing and making walkthrough videos of Nintendo games and that kind of stuff.
Huh.
And
So your son's creative too.
Yeah, we homeschool, so he's like also like seeing us work and make money from computers, and also like watched us learn new careers from YouTube tutorials. And I feel like that's the future. I mean, obviously he wants to be a doctor or something, he has to go to university. But most other professions, like the way to learn is to always learn and to learn from the internet.
Yeah.
That is a surprisingly healthy attitude towards homeschooling. And in the United States, the reason why most people homeschool is a little different over here. It's mostly because they don't like science, and they just want to stuff their kids with religion.
Oh no! Like we vaccinate, we wear masks. We support like LGBT community. We're like, yeah, we're not crazy people.
Yeah. It's just interesting because when here in America, it's almost a dirty word if you're any sort of progressive. But that's cool. Like you're kind of exposing them to an alternate view of like, oh, you can get your start by going on the internet. I think that's true. I think that as time goes by, the model for school is inevitably going to change at some point. The idea that you're supposed to go to a classroom, specifically a very traditional system where you go and learn from a teacher that's paid by the county. I don't know what the situation is for that, but that you go and sit down for 9 hours a day and then for 18 years, you know, you do that and then you go poop out a career at that point. And that is eventually going to change, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's difficult. It's difficult too. We're in a really fortunate position, and it's like we can afford to give time, and we can afford to like take time out of our day to be with him. And I think the thing with school is just it's not possible for teachers to give the dedication to like 25 kids in a room. And the thing is like to really excel, or not excel, you know, to really just get what you need out of an education, you need someone to sit there and like look you in the eyes and engage with what you're thinking and talking about.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And being in a room reading off it. Like I learned French for 5 years and I can't speak French. You know what I mean? And I went to a really good school. It's like, so am I an idiot or was it bad teaching?
I think it's just a matter of, it's harder to, I guess, retain information when you're learning in like a group setting. Cause like I had a really hard time in school. Like I went to like legitimately 10 different high schools because I just didn't care about school because like, it's like one of those things where it is very hard to feel like you're learning something. And like, I almost feel like it's almost better to just have like a either like homeschool or like some kind of self-sustaining way to learn where you can kind of do it in like a more comfortable setting, you know, just like you're doing with your son. I think I personally think that's awesome. I think that's the premier way of learning, in my opinion. Granted, I don't have kids, so I'm not in a place to speak on it. But I think that's a lot better personally.
You mentioned something a second ago about the idea of having taken 5 years of French and not really retaining it, and it's speaking on the quality of the education. I think that actually brings something up, which is a topic that's been explored on another podcast called Hello Internet with CGP Gray and Brady Heron, in which Gray has often said that the idea of teaching a foreign language is very outdated, because I actually took 4 years of French and I know enough French at this point that if I was blindfolded, beat up and drugged and suddenly, you know, dropped into Paris and had to defend my way, I could deal with it. Like I could get by. Okay. But I don't really know French.
Quick, order a bowl of soup. Order a bowl of
exactly.
soup.
Yeah. And
I'm putting you on the spot, Lars. Order a bowl of soup and a Sprite.
Okay, I would like a bowl of soup and a Sprite.
No, do it in French.
Why? We're in America.
I know, but this is a hypothetical scenario. I'm training you on the off chance you do get drugged
Duplex
and brought
is not
to
even
France.
Noon. I'm not ready for complex hypotheticals.
Okay.
The first thing you're going to need in that situation is a bowl of soup.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So there's Gray posits the idea that instead of teaching foreign languages, which, to be honest, French was pointless for me. I took it because it was interesting. Well, actually, I took it because I didn't care to learn Spanish and I thought French was cooler, but I don't need it at all. And he posits that instead of learning a foreign language in high school or college or both, that we should take programming lessons. Yes. And what do you guys think of that?
I think that's great. I think it's like that's important for the future.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. There's a lot of stuff that it's just so outdated as far as like education goes. Like I get like, you know, learning about certain things just so that way you're, because I don't know if it's like they think like if we teach the same curriculum or whatever to the same kids year after year, everybody's going to be on like equal ground or whatever, but they don't really account for things progressing. So I think programming would be a good thing to learn because I'm so stupid when it comes to that stuff.
Yeah, and also the kids that are geniuses but have behavioral issues.
Right.
I think that that's true. Understanding the devices that we spend, I guess, somewhere between what, like 8 and 16 hours a day on is probably more useful than being able to speak a language for a country that you'll probably never even visit.
Yeah.
It or seems to make sense.
Or
to
being
me.
Able to recite who was at a dinner party during the French Revolution.
Yeah.
Yeah, I learned Latin at school and I've never met a Roman.
Yeah. I mean, even if you had, it's like they don't speak it. So right. It's right. Like, I don't know. I feel like we could really get into a whole discussion on this, but I think there's a lot of different classes in school that I found practically useless. I think, like, for example, maybe a year of history is probably enough.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think you need, like, I took AP Euro in high school and it's like, okay, like I don't live in Europe, but I could have taken a weekend kind of semester on it maybe.
And history is so funny, right? Because I'm a half Croatian, so I grew up like jumping between a communist country and England. And everywhere right. you go, everyone thinks they won World War II, right? So if you go to the United States, it's like, you guys won World War II, right? With the might of your army. It's like, you go to a communist country, they're like, we won World War II. You know what I mean? If it wasn't for Russia, you lot would have failed. So it's like, you know, it's funny. Everyone, so you learn this history, but it's like everyone learns their history.
Right. And I feel like a lot of stuff gets left out too. That
it does.
I feel like is pertinent. So yeah, it's I agree. I think like a solid year, maybe, just to learn the basics, like certain dates, just in case anybody ever asks you, or if you ever go on like Family Feud or some shit, it's like good to know. But yeah.
Yeah. In Britain, I think they should do a class on like why is everyone angry with us?
Yeah, you were saying a second ago, Duplex, it's fascinating. I want to give a fact that I learned fairly recently as an example of it, which is that I didn't know that World War II was basically like two different wars. Like there was the Axis versus the Allies, and then there was the Pacific War, and it was like two different theaters entirely, and we just kind of call them World War II. Like our understanding of history is very, in some ways, sanitized and simplified for class. And
yeah.
Another observation I've made on the podcast before kind of ties into that, where each year, especially in grade school, they would teach me something about history. And then the year after that, they'd be like, well, that wasn't really true. We just kind of simplified it because you were seven and you couldn't handle the harsh realities of it. And then the year after that, it's like, well, actually, it was a lot worse. And
right.
It kept going from there. Like I remember, like the idea of the pilgrims settling in America was very bloodless and very very cute and nice when I was in like kindergarten and stuff, and then I learned about the atrocities of it later.
Right,
just like stuff like that. It's just history is a weird subject. It's never taught very well.
Yeah,
yeah. Columbus was a dish.
Yeah.
But you know, the other one they always get wrong is physics. Like a lot of the stuff I was taught as physics in school is all wrong now. And they like, you know, like particles, they were like, this is a little ball floating around another ball. And now it's like, now it's a wave of possibility. It's not actually there. And then it's like, it's a wave of potential. None of us might be here. Like when we look at reality on the like building block level, it disappears and reappears based on how we're looking at it. And no one really knows what's going on. They didn't tell me that in school.
Right.
They told me something different.
That's actually really interesting. Do you think it's maybe like the reason why things change, like the whole like science class, do you think it's because us as a humanity, as a civilization, we're constantly learning shit? So maybe like whatever we're learning could just be completely defunct in like a decade's time. You know what I mean? Like that's really interesting to think about. Like if like it's science, they just like discover some new particle that, or some new atom that affects something in a specific way that throws everything that they've ever known out the window. And all of these kids just don't know anything because whatever they taught them is completely obsolete at that point. I'm curious if that'll ever happen.
Yeah, I think, not to go off into crazy conspiracy stuff, but have you guys seen any of the like U.S. Navy Tic Tac UFO stuff?
Yes.
So, I mean, I used to love that UFOs when I was a kid, but I seriously went through like two, three decades where I was like, anyone who believes in UFOs is totally crazy and that stuff right. is totally made up. And there is no flipping way aliens are visiting us. There's no flipping way any of this is going on. And then, you know, the US Navy releases footage and it's like, I just don't know what to say anymore.
Yeah. That stuff is, it feels like we're getting closer to that point, right? Like, it's almost as if, because I feel like the whole, I guess, like conspiracy theorists who, like even that term in itself is, it doesn't mean anything anymore because like we're still learning things where it's like things that you would normally think are out of the realm of possibility very well might not be out of the realm of possibility.
Some of them.
Obviously within reason. Yeah.
So these Tic Tac things, they go from space down to sea level in 2 seconds. They go like Mach 26. You know,
yeah.
It's that. And so that's if that's real, you know, unless the US Navy is lying to us because they're playing mind games, if that's right. real, that's mega exciting. Like, yeah. I, you know, you could get to Japan in 3 minutes. I'd like that, you know, I'd like that.
That would be awesome.
The fact that there are like aliens flying around getting to Japan in 3 minutes and we can't do it is a little frustrating.
Yeah, I'm a little jealous. I'm not going to lie. And the fact that those Tic Tac things can just go into the fucking ocean without disturbing the water and it's just like they just fly around down there, see shit that we can't see. Where do they get off? Who do they think they are?
Underwater bases. That's just what some of the theories is.
Yeah. Which is insane. That's like that would make sense. Like imagine if all this time we've been looking up at the stars trying to see some aliens, but in reality they've just been in the water, everybody's too afraid to go.
Duplex, they tried this. It's called Bioshock. It didn't work out too well.
What if that's what Bioshock is based off of?
Bioshock is a documentary.
Yeah.
About aliens.
Yeah. Art imitates life, homie.
Yeah, I guess, man. So Johnny, we've talked about kind of your past and in some ways your present. And sometimes we have artists on the show. I like to talk about their future. And I'm curious, because this is a question we ask pretty frequently, which is, do you see yourself doing this stuff when you're 70?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I'll have to be dragged off the computer, to be honest with you.
That's fucking awesome, dude. That's a great attitude.
That is pretty cool.
And also, like, because my wife does it, it's like like, we haven't watched TV in months.
Yeah.
Just because every day when after we put our son to bed, it's like, let's make shit. You know, just make art. And God, it's so fun, so addictive. I mean, I've been doing it like when I was a teenager, I first got into samplers and I just sit sampling records and making music out of it. And that was so exciting for me. And now at 40 years old, this stuff, still making music and stuff, is as exciting. I'm just like every day for the last like 20 something years has been like getting up and being, let's make stuff. I think like in future, where I'm going in the future, we want to make like TV shows and movies, but like we want to write them. We want to do everything at home.
Yeah. I feel like a TV show or a movie in your style would be like some groundbreaking stuff. Like, I feel like that would, it'd be an eclectic film.
Oh.
Nice. Yeah, I want to do a Kung Fu musical where, like, you know, it's not like a modern musical where they sing and dance and go, I love to punch you in the face. But it's more like every punch and kick, every shard of glass breaking makes the melody and the rhythm and everything like a real modern musical. It's like electronic music and cool beats, not like dingy dancey stuff.
Right. I love the idea of that because there's a VR game called Pistol Whip and it's basically like John Wick meets Beat Saber. It's like you're basically doing like it's an on rails combat sequence where you're shooting along with like heavy house music, and it's like you match your bullets with the beat, and it just like it's an experience because like what you're experiencing goes with the music. So it's like a very I don't even know the word for it, but like I love shit like that where like it's just like all one beautiful package, you know?
That sounds fantastic.
Oh, it's so good. So please make that.
one of the things that I think is worth talking about, by the way, and this might be especially of interest to some of the people who are listening in right now on the Discord who are involved in this, is the concept of plunder phonics as a genre. And for people who are unfamiliar with that, plunder phonics is I guess you could call it a type of music, but also kind of an approach where people take things from other media and remix them to make other stuff. And that's something that you've done in your career as well. So I'm curious if you have an ear to the pulse of the genre itself.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, maybe it was a lot more last year, and now I'm transitioning into watching a lot more motion graphics artists and people doing like motion graphics musical stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I still keep up with other video remix people, and you know, a lot of them are my friends.
Okay. Do you have any in particular that you like? Or
yeah, one guy I'm doing a lot of stuff with is Jonathan Mann, Song a Day Man. He makes a song every day, and he does a lot of stuff where he'll remix video and then sing with it. And I've been doing a lot of stuff with him where we both do a remix of the same subject.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's obviously like Mike Realm. Oh, man, there's a lot of really good video remix artists out there. But, yeah, Mike Realm's also an amazing scratch DJ, Addictive TV in the UK, Cold Cut Hex Static. Yeah, there's a lot of them from my history. But nowadays, I think a lot of people have maybe slowed down a bit because of the copyright stuff and also the music industry taking a break. Like, there's not a lot of events. A lot of these people were doing stuff for events. It's been interesting to watch DJs because a lot of DJs have like stopped releasing tunes now that they can't go out and tour them. And like I understand that, but I also feel like that's kind of a bit weird. It's like should just be churning out music because you love it. But
right.
Yeah, so there's a lot of that. Like, everything's determined. It's really interesting. Everything's been determined by the live events world, and now that's disappeared. We're left with like artists making visual art.
Yeah. And I feel like the internet is definitely playing a key role in like the overall success of a lot of people's creativity. And I am curious because you said a little bit earlier about how you and your wife haven't watched TV because you're so dead set on making stuff and you've been doing it for a while. And I'm curious as to how you manage to stay creative for such a long time, even with like landscapes changing and laws changing, like so many things at play affecting what would normally affect your work, but seemingly doesn't. How do you do that?
I think a lot of it's learning new software all the time, like learning new things all the time. Because you always find something new that you didn't think of, or you can apply something that you've done before in a new, different way.
Right.
And yeah, now it's just like, I've literally like had my hands tied so many times. I've had so many projects that like nearly got off the ground with huge directors and TV shows and all that kind of stuff. And just now suddenly this whole freedom of like making original art, and there's no lawyers to talk to. It's just, it's amazing. I'm so happy right now.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
Like 24 years of copyright infringement and then jumping into original work. It's like, oh my God, I can do all this and do all that. And also I have, like when I got into crypto art, I had a lot of people that followed me because of the remix stuff. And they just helped me, you know, make money and meet cool people and collaborate. And it's just been amazing. It's all this internet thing. And I was like in perfectly the right place because of Eclectic Method.
That's awesome. Yeah, it definitely seems like a perfect place, the right place, the right time. I think
I've always been a DJ and hanging out in DJ land, but I've not really like gelled with DJs. I've always more been gelling with like coders and people who work in, when I was in America, a lot of my friends are like Silicon Valley types and programmers and people that make software and people that behind the scenes at music festivals, building the stage rigs. So like those are the people that I, my genuine friends.
Yeah, I getcha. I
was going to toss it to the live questions, but go ahead.
No. Go. Well, I mean, I was just going to ask what the story was behind Eclectic Method Sucks.
I fucking hate Eclectic Method.
So, you know how DJs always do a thing where they're like, this is the greatest DJ in the world. And
yeah.
That kind of gets on my nerves a bit because it's like, well, we're listening to you play. We'll judge that, you know? And right. Also, whenever you ask famous people to do you a drop, they always do it because they're nice. But I found that when you go up to famous people and you go, okay, I want you to talk about how much you hate me and how much I suck. And their faces always light up. They're like, oh, yeah. And they just go on. Some of them go on for like a minute or two. Just like,
I just endured like an hour of Eclectic Method. And they're the fucking drunken cunt with a capital cunt.
It's amazing. Yeah, Donald Glover went on for like a minute and a half of like having a stab fight with me and that kind of stuff. So it's great. That's why I do it. And I also, I just love the concept of like one day I'll have a video with lots of famous people talking about how much I suck.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I'm not going to lie. It adds to the whole vibe. You're like this this hated entity now between celebrities.
Yeah, and also it's also because, you know, it's not like I'm famous or anything. So it's people are like, wait, why are all these really well-known people so involved with this character that they hate him and I've never heard of it? You know what I mean? It's like, I love that aspect to it.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. I even for a second, I was like the Donald Glover one specifically, I legitimately thought it was real for a second.
That's because he's such a good actor.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's cool.
Speaking of things that suck, Doplex, have you ever heard of The Create Unknown?
No. What is that, Lars?
The Create Unknown is, I think, maybe the worst podcast in the world. It's hosted by Kevin of Vsauce2 and Matt Tabor.
I was 12. Marshall, my boyfriend of Claw Street, had teamed up with a guy who lived on Ortoe Street, just above the urinal where diners began to dip their piece of bread in piss. They put the whole loaves coming in and resumed the gentle evening. We had spotted them. We were naive. We did not realize they ate bread swollen with urine.
Guys, go ahead and subscribe to them today. It's one of the worst things I've ever heard. Make sure to listen to every single episode that they do, just so you can know just how bad they are. It's terrible. They have a lot of really shitty people on their podcast, like Doplex and Kudos as well. So make sure to consume all of their content, just so you know how bad it is. So go ahead and check them out. Johnny, we have a couple people in the audience that have been wanting to give a live question. And if you're okay with that, I'd like to turn it over to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so
bring forth your questions.
I'm going to give it to Efrio first.
Hello, hello. How are
hello.
You?
Hello.
You're on air. Good.
Yes.
Caller.
Hey, Efrio.
Hello. Big fan. I've been a big fan for a really, really long time. I have a couple of questions about just your project flow in general. So one of the things that I come in contact with, like one of these problems, is that whenever I get to an end of the project, like I've poured so much of my creative juices into that particular project that I end up hitting a bit of a lull that lasts for a couple of weeks before I work up enough inspiration to get to the next one. I'm just wondering how you get past that. Like, do you have multiple projects like happening at the same time? Is there a specific kind of process to get you amped up for the next thing? And then also just like very specifically about sampling, do you have a particular pipeline of like software or like just the process to get from, you know, whatever original piece of media to the types of, you know, tracks that you make?
Sampling first, I use Magix Vegas, which is a video editing software that lets you edit in beats and bars. So almost all video editing software lets you edit in frames. And there's only like 20, 30 frames a second or 60 frames a second. That's not detailed enough for music. So Magix Vegas lets you move the clips between frames, and then later on it fixes the mistakes. And that allows you to like just make rhythms inside the video editing software instead of having to go to Ableton and redo it. So my pipeline for that usually is like, I'll pull in YouTube clips or movie clips, and I'll watch through them and cut them, and I'll sort them into sound effects, things that sound good, like video stuff that doesn't have any sound but looks cool. And then I'll sort everything everyone says by how it rhymes. So I'll sort all the times into E, cat, bat, chat, all that stuff. And I'll just sort it by how it rhymes with breaks in the sentences.
Right, yeah, you know, very cool.
Natural breaks. And then later on, I'll come back to that and I'll just start trying to make a rhyme that also has a narrative point to it. Mm. And usually that's easy if I've cut it right. So if you have like someone doing an interview about a certain subject, it's very easy to turn them into a song. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's my pipeline for that. But in terms of like finishing stuff off, yeah, I usually have like loads of projects on the go, and my day is like, I'll work half an hour on many different projects. And then if one's coming to a deadline or I have to do it, I'm working on just that one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's really, really cool.
Anything else, Sefrio?
Thank you for your question, caller.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, Not really. I mean, you follow me on Twitter and that's really cool. So, and I'm following you on Twitter.
Yeah,
so.
I recognize you from Twitter. Yeah. I'll follow you here too on Discord.
Oh,
how nice.
Thanks for answering my question.
Thanks, Efrio. Cool.
Thank you, Efrio. I mean, caller. Thank you, caller. It's my okay. radio voice.
I'm Atlas, doing. You are next.
Caller, no. You're on the air with Eclectic Method.
Hi there. I'm Atlas Genesist. I do video editing on the side. But I'm here to ask you, do you remember a show that you did in 2015 for it's this venue that was called the Rex Club in Paris? It was back in 2015 in October for Back to the Future. Bunch of
yeah, with Pogo.
Yeah. And I also know that there's also another guy who was playing live at the same time. I'm not sure who that were. It was you.
Oh, yeah, Pogo. Yeah, yeah. He's from an English guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've forgotten his name, but he's also a video artist. No, he's done some really good stuff, man. I must remember his name. He did a really amazing Star Wars remix.
Giovanni Sample.
Oh, okay. Is the other one was Efro saying Geesh. That's the guy I was talking about who did the amazing Star Wars remix. And I think he wasn't playing that night, but he was hanging out.
There's also this other artist who was there, Giovanni Sample. I don't know if you've ever heard of them ever since then. I'm not sure if they do much.
No. I think I missed them as well because I was playing really late and I had to go play in Berlin the next morning. So I slept right up until before my set.
Right. It's really all I wanted to ask because I'm going to be trying to see if I can archive as much as I can for that show. Not a lot out there. That's why. Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
All right. Thanks, Atlas.
Cool. Thank you, caller.
All right. So unless there's anyone else who wants to give a live question on air, I think that's going to do it.
Many kudos.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
Thanks for your contribution. Kudos. Really appreciate it.
Oh, kudos.
I'm so sorry.
Poor bastard. I'm sorry.
To wake up.
We love you. That's okay. I know. We know you're half
really
asleep.
Frustrating like, this has been really weird because I've been like really enjoying listening. It feels like I've been listening to a really good podcast and then I remember I can actually talk as well.
You could chime in because you're on this podcast.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird scenario. Because you know sometimes when you're listening to a podcast by, you know, and you're like, you kind of feel like you're part of a gang almost. You're like, oh, here's what I'd say in this conversation. And then I just kept reminding myself I actually could.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything to say. You guys are doing such a good job.
Where in Australia are you?
I'm in Melbourne, Victoria.
Nice.
But I haven't had to get up before 6 a.m. in a very long time. But I'm glad I was here to listen live anyway. You're a fascinating man and a creative individual, which is infinitely inspiring. So thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for getting up so early, man.
It's fine. Thanks for coming on, dude.
Yeah, thanks, Johnny.
Yeah, thank you for coming on, Johnny. This is a great episode. Your stuff is fantastic. Obviously, I don't need to tell you that.
Thank you. Thank you.
And yeah, we appreciate you doing this, man. This is a good time. This is fun. This is a nice little wholesome romp that we all just participate in.
Let's do this every week.
Yeah,
doing a podcast together. I think that's a fantastic idea. We should. I know this was our first episode ever, but I think there's potential here. I really do.
Welcome to the Eclectic Podcast. Brought to you by Blue Chew.
And kudos and Doplex. I think I'll see you here next week. I think that's going to work.
Okay.
I quit.
The first podcast is hot. I want to suck a fart out its ass and hold it like a bong hit.